From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on September 15th in the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. The court issued a 3-0 ruling, upholding a 2014 ruling about racial characteristics, what they are and what they are not. Here's the short version. At least according to a lot of the headlines we've been reading for the last 3 months, the court decided that an employer can fire or dismiss an employee for wearing dreadlocks. Now, from Slate.com to many other news sites, headlines declared that the court was giving the thumbs up to discriminate against traditionally black hairstyles, and thus to discriminate against black workers. But the judge who wrote the ruling essentially disagrees with that. U.S. Circuit Judge Adalberto Jordan wrote that employers cannot discriminate based on race, but he said that hairstyle is not tied to race. It's mutable versus immutable. Here's the actual language the judge used. Quote, discrimination on the basis of black hair texture, an immutable characteristic, is prohibited by Title VII, while adverse action on the basis of black hairstyle, a mutable choice, is not. End quote. Now, that case centered on a woman named Chastity Jones, who was getting ready to start a job with a company called Catastrophe Management Solutions in Mobile, Alabama. As Jones tells it, a white manager at the company told her that her dreadlocks were against company policy because, quote, they tend to get messy. Jones explained that she was not going to change her hair and that she disagreed with the ban. The company responded by rescinding the job offer. And so the recent court ruling offers support for the company in disciplining or dismissing workers based on having dreadlocks. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission disagreed with the judges and the court's ruling, writing, quote, dreadlocks are a manner of wearing the hair that is physiologically and culturally associated with people of African descent, end quote. And the EEOC argued that race is a social construct, not solely defined by traits that can't be changed. It also asserted that the hairstyle can be a determinant of racial identity. Slate magazine condemned the ruling, writing, quote, racial categories have always been subjective and culturally informed. Professional, businesslike, and neat are subjective too, and it's no coincidence that traditional black hairstyles so often fall on the adverse side of those terms' interpreted meanings. That's discrimination, end quote. Well, this hour, let's talk about what employers can and can't do and what this case means. Let's talk about that with our guest, Stephen Jones. Steve is a partner at Nixon Peabody. He specializes in labor and employment law. Steve, nice to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Evan.
And Arena Golden Collier is the co-creator of Kumba Consultants. And Arena, thank you. Thanks for coming back on the program here.
Thanks for having me.
Steve, in this case, you know, you've got Slate, you've got others interpreting this through the lens of saying this looks like the court got it wrong, that this looks like you're sanctioning discrimination. The judge who wrote the opinion said, We would never support this based on skin color. Hairstyle is different. Based on the law as you would read it, who's right here?
The court got this decision correct under the current law. So the law that's at issue is Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which proscribes discrimination based on race, color, ethnicity, national origin, and immutable characteristics that are associated with those protected categories. What the EEOC did, and this was a rare case where the EEOC asserted its standing under Title VII and brought a claim on behalf of the charging party, Ms. Jones. The EEOC brought the lawsuit, and what the EEOC argued is that dreadlocks are so physiologically and culturally associated with African Americans that for an employer to have a policy that prohibits the wearing of dreadlocks in the workplace is tantamount to intentional discrimination. And what the court did was the court looked at Title VII and looked at specifically what Title VII prohibited and determined that dreadlocks are a hairstyle, which is not an immutable characteristic. It is a hairstyle of choice. It's not a hairstyle that is only limited to African Americans. Any race can wear dreadlocks. And what the court found was because of that, it's essentially mutable and not immutable, and that this facially neutral policy, just as a matter of law, could not be intentionally discriminatory.
Okay. Rena, did that ruling surprise you?
Well, it doesn't surprise me. Nothing surprises me that much, you know, when it comes to issues of race. It really doesn't. But what does surprise me is how, you know, just the way the language of that particular law is being, there's so much of it that still is very subjective to me. So the idea of it not being, it being mutable, and who's qualified to say that? So the natural process of my hair, if I don't actually comb out the very tight curls of my hair, the coils of my hair, is for it to lock. Now, I may style those locks in a particular way, which is to twist them so that they look to my liking. And that part is the styling of it. But the natural process of my hair, and those who have a tight coil pattern like mine, what some people refer to as nappy hair, and I proudly refer to my hair as nappy, is what happens to the nap is it coils around itself, and that creates the lock. And so though others can style their hair in that manner, absolutely, I've seen, you know, white people with dreadlocks, but they've styled them that way.
By choice.
Yeah. They've actually put some kind of gook in their hair to make it mat up or make it like appear matted and kind of make it stick together, and that's the style they're wearing. Myself, I've never put any product in my hair to actually form dreadlocks, and most people that have a thick, tight curl pattern like me, they don't need to do anything like that. And Rastas would definitely agree with that because they don't style their hair. They just let their hair do what it actually does. So that's the first thing that I find problematic with it, is just who's qualified to say whether or not this is a style or whether this is a naturally occurring, phenomenon, you know, with specifically black hair or hair that is of the kinkiness that will result in a dreadlock.
All right, so what Rena's saying, Steve, is maybe something that a court hadn't considered. And, you know, courts probably didn't expect that they would be parsing hair style and natural hair textures. But what Rena's saying is, you're right, white people can wear dreads, and they do it by choice. For her, naturally, this is her. And that this feels like a statement that says if she doesn't change something that is essential to who she is, she can't work at certain places. I mean, you understand the consternation she would have if she were Chastity Jones, if she were so many people who felt like this ruling says this does discriminate against you and who you are.
I have to do more to keep my hair from locking than otherwise. I have to do more to it to make it appear more to the standard that apparently is acceptable by this company.
Okay, and so could the law change in any way to eventually address this from your perspective?
Well, Steve? No. I mean, Rena makes many good points, and I understand exactly what you're saying. It's interesting, though, that the EEOC did not advance that argument. The EEOC never argued that dreadlocks were an immutable characteristic of being African American. They specifically avoided that argument and did not make it. What they argued instead is that Title VII and its definition of race should have a much more expansive definition. Mm-hmm. And what the EEOC argued is that race essentially now is a social construct. It is something that perhaps doesn't even have a biological definition or biological component to it, which is an interesting analysis by the EEOC and probably could warrant a whole discussion on your show, Evan, at some point. So the EEOC did not advance the argument that Rena is making, that, you know, essentially she doesn't have a choice in terms of how she wears her hair. The EEOC specifically said, no, this is a hairstyle. It's a hairstyle that's physiologically and culturally tied to being African-American. The EEOC even went so far as to say that if a white person were to wear dreadlocks in the workplace as a sign of solidarity with African-Americans, that that would be racially protected under Title VII as well. And I think the court looked at that and said, that is so much of a stretch of the purpose of Title VII that the court could not buy into the EEOC's argument.
Yeah, and I don't hear Rena saying she can't change it. I hear Rena saying she could change it. It would be a lot of work. What would it take? What would it take for you to change it?
It takes, like I said, it takes as much for most of us. It takes as much work or more. In my case, more work for me to make my hair conform to the standard that is acceptable, you know, without question for most companies, you know, in a corporate setting, which I come from a corporate background as well. So I remember that, you know, I remember the chemical straightening of my hair, which can also be a very painful process. It's a damaging process to the hair and scalp. And I also remember, you know, choosing not to do chemicals, but then going for heat, you know, to straighten it out, you know. And, I think that even with those arguments and where I think they might have gotten it wrong, the EFC might have gotten it wrong in terms of which, where, and why they made that choice not to really talk about, you know, it from a more technical standpoint than, you know, maybe some of the things that are a little bit more loose as it relates to race and social identity and those kind of pieces. There's also this stigma about our hair still that we're not always comfortable with having that argument, you know, about what's really going on with my hair, because there's still a stigma associated with this idea of nappy hair, this idea of black hair. And that's, you know, that's, I get that. You know, I get that. I may not enter into that conversation. I'm talking with you about it right now. But I mean, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when I was in corporate, I might not have been comfortable with even having that kind of conversation with someone that says, no, my hair is like this when it comes out of my head. You know, I'm straightening the heck out of my hair to try to make it look more like the white standard. You know, that's because I know that that's what's okay here.
Yeah. Steve, did you want to weigh in on that? And then I'll grab some phone calls.
Yeah,
I see the phone ringing.
And to Rena's point, the court in this decision took great pains to distinguish between what it deemed to be a hairstyle, that is dreadlocks, and hair texture. Mm-hmm. And what the court said is that any policy that would be specific or focused on hair texture would be per se discriminatory, because the texture of hair is an immutable characteristic. So, for example, the court said a policy that would ban the wearing of an afro would be discriminatory under Title VII, because that is a natural outgrowth of the hair, at least according to the court.
Mm,
okay.
Interesting.
And you know, but I think what I'm hearing from Rena is, for some people who wear dreadlocks, it's not about a texture, it's about a style choice. But for some people, it's the natural choice based on the texture of the hair.
It's similar to an afro. My choice,
yeah,
not to straighten it, and what I do with it if I don't straighten it.
Yeah.
So that part becomes a part of the styling.
I wonder if the EEOC would have been more successful if they would have employed that sort of a disposition, or at least an argument, Steve.
It certainly could have been. The EEOC also did not advance another argument, which may have been successful, and that is a disparate impact theory. That is where an employer has a facially neutral policy that has an adverse disproportionate effect on a protected class of people. Strategically, the EEOC, for some reason, did not assert that argument in this case.
All right. So, listeners, if you got questions, phone calls, comments about this, because we're talking about this particular case, but I know there are sort of related questions to what employers are and are not allowed to do, and we'll get to that in a moment. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994 in Geneva. Listening on Finger Lakes Public Radio, 89.5 FM WEOS. This is Chris. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi, I'm not sure if the Title VII protects against discrimination for religion, but when I think of dreadlocks, I think of Rastafarians, and that's a part of their religion. And so would it protect folks if that was a practicing Rastafarian, that they would they be able to keep their dreadlocks and keep their job, or would that, is that something totally separate?
It's a great question.
Yeah.
So Title VII of the Civil Rights Act was initially enacted in 1964. It was amended in 1972 to protect religion as well. And it's a great question, because the wearing of dreadlocks, if it is an expression of religion, would be protected under Title VII. And what the analysis would require then is for the employer to demonstrate that there is some business necessity which would justify banning the wearing of dreadlocks in the workplace. In this particular case, I think that analysis would fail, because Ms. Jones, she worked in a back office function. She was a customer service representative who answered phones on behalf of insurance companies as part of the claims process. She had no direct interaction with customers. She was not working on a retail floor shop. So the employer really would have been strained to argue that there is some legitimate business reason for this type of grooming policy for an employee who works in a back office function. It's a great question.
Follow up there, Chris?
No, that was all. I was just curious because when I think of dreads, I think of Rastafarians, and that would be a religious thing, and I thought that would be discriminatory.
Thank you, Chris. And here's an email from a listener named Elizabeth who sort of kind of going down a similar road there. I'll read this. Elizabeth writes, terrible decisions. I imagine the court was worried about going down the slippery slope of overregulating employee attire and appearance, traditionally the domain of the employer. But they got it wrong in their analysis of what constitutes a mutable versus immutable characteristic. If she'd been wearing her hair in this fashion for religious reasons, it would not have gone this way. Black women wearing their hair naturally versus policies regarding what constitutes a, quote, professional appearance has been a hot button issue. And that's sort of what Rena was talking about. Yeah. So can you tell me about some of what you've experienced in regards to comments people have made in the office and some of the reaction just to your hair over the years?
Sure. I mean, first I'll start off by saying that, you know, this is coming up. This is super timely because what we're seeing right now is this, like, this abundance of natural hairstyles in out there in public now, especially in the workplace, in a way that it did not exist 15 years ago, 20 years ago. I mean, outside of what happened in the 70s, late 60s and 70s, you know, with the Black Power movement, when you did see afros everywhere, for the past, you know, 20, 30 years, this has not been a thing at all. And so now what we're seeing is the backlash of that, of like, wait a second, this is not like just a passing trend. There is a statement being made. And that's what I experienced. I experienced that once it went beyond people looking at it like, oh, she just changed her hairstyle again, which, you know, Black women, we have the luxury of doing. We get to wear our hair in all these different ways. And so, you know, once it became, oh, this is really, she's wearing her hair natural. Like, this is the look, and it's very far from the look that has been deemed as appropriate and professional. You know, that term was thrown around a lot. You know, just the idea of whether something is professional. So when it went from, you know, kind of fatty, trendy, like maybe this is just a passing thing, a style that she's wearing, to she will not perm her hair, relax her hair, straighten her hair anymore, that's when I started to see, you know, just more questions and comments in the sense. And the comments were derogatory. It wasn't, there was the curiosity, but then there was kind of the ill factor, like, what's going on? And I even heard in the language of, as you were reading, you know, the details of this case, this concept of messy. Who decides what's messy? How subjective? What could be even more subjective than the idea of what's messy? And why is it deemed messy? Because it's my natural look, you know, because I'm not straightening it, I should say. So when I use the term natural, I'm really talking about when Black women choose not to straighten their hair, whether it be chemically or with heat. I've heard those comments that suggested that my hair was not done, it was not kept, was messy, and that all, you know, equated to it being unprofessional, you know, in some way.
Do you, when people have said those things, I mean, do you tend to ignore it? Do you answer back?
No, I answer back. You know, I answer back. And, you know, it's gone, you know, the range of, like, educating people, you know, about my hair, you know, which I don't feel I should have to do. But, you know, educating them about my hair. But also in attempts to talk about it, to normalize it. And it's a shame that I have to. But just to normalize the idea that this is a style that I'm wearing that a lot of Black women choose to wear. And it's because this is the way our hair, this is closer to our natural state than what you're used to seeing, which is permed and pressed and relaxed and weaved or wigged hair that looks more like white women wear their hair.
Okay. And Stephen, you want to add anything before I grab another phone call?
Yeah, just to clarify on Rena's point regarding the comment about the hair being messy, that was a very awkward, clumsy statement that was made by the HR director in the case. It was not anything that the court opined on in its decision.
Okay, but that is, to you, that's way out of bounds.
Yeah, that was an inappropriate comment. Ultimately, that's not what the case was about. It was about the policy itself. But that comment itself is an accurate quote that was said by the HR manager in the case.
Okay. Don in Brighton on the phone next. Go ahead, Don.
Well, I look back for my years of working. Companies have always had a right of saying how you should look at work. They told me I needed to wear a certain tie for certain jobs. They told me that in certain places I had to wear certain types of clothes. And I know people right now who have to wear a special type of elegant suit to work. And people have a right to say how your appearance. And then, like this one lady said, oh, she doesn't think her hair is messy. You know, who defines messy? Well, I must say that out of the dreadlocks I see, 9 out of 10 look very unkempt. And if they're short, some of them look very neat. But a lot of them, and I would say almost all of them, that are more than a few inches long, are very messy and unkempt. And someone who is unkempt gives a bad appearance at work. And I don't care what this lady says about who's to decide what's messy.
But Don.
If I want, let me finish.
Okay, go
if
ahead.
I wanted to go to work wearing a T-shirt, because that's me, and that's the way I want to look, but the company tells me I should wear a certain tie, I think there's a certain right that companies have some right in saying how you should appear.
Okay, so Don, I think everybody agrees that companies have every right to say, you know, you can't wear ripped jeans to work. I got an email from a gentleman who said, I own a business, but imagine somebody takes a job as a server in a high-end restaurant, and instead of wearing the work uniform, they show up wearing a bandana and ripped jeans. They're not going to be able to keep working. And I think everybody agrees with that.
Yeah.
You know, that's not really up for debate here.
What's up for debate is the appearance. As I say, almost everyone I've ever seen looks unkempt.
But Don.
It'd be like I went to work without combing my hair ever.
But Don. But let me just ask you a question.
I'd like
Rena to respond. But can I, Rena? Do you mind if I just ask
sure,
one quick
ahead.
Follow-up? Because I'm trying to work through his. So Don, let's imagine a world where things went differently in human history. Let's imagine a world in which most of the political power, the corporate power, was held by African Americans, and that white people experienced housing discrimination, all kinds of discrimination over the years, and that most of the people who were running Fortune 500s, most of the people who have ever been American presidents and senators and members of Congress are African American. Let's just imagine that world. And let's imagine that they decide that the hair you have coming out of your head just doesn't look kind of professional to them. I mean,
it doesn't look right. Don't like it.
Could you maybe, you know, put some dreads in because do it a different way because it's not what they're used to? Would you feel that that's fair to you?
I say, why not? If that's the style, I say, why not? My point is, if they would all take good care of it, that would be one thing. But I almost never see one that's neat.
Okay.
And it's taken care of. There's a difference.
Don, I see people with dreads all the time, and their hair looks professional and great.
I have a question. I just want to know what, this idea of neat or kept, It still suggests, it really just reeks of the idea of assimilation to a standard that is unlike my own natural standard. I think to continue that experiment there, it would be like we were asking you to alter your physical appearance to look more like mine, so that I'm more comfortable and I think it looks neater. I think it looks better if your skin were darker and there's a way that you can make it darker. I just need you to just tan a lot more. Or I need your hair should be thicker. It should be thicker and it should be kinkier. Is there some kind of product that you could do, some sort of chemical alteration that you can do to make your hair thicker and just more curlier, because I just think that looks neater on people. That's what I would be asking you to do if I were in a position of majority and of power. So let's just say you lived outside of America in the rest of the world, where people of color are the world majority, and everywhere you went, you were being looked at as so different that it's not even just different. It's unprofessional, and it just looks messy for your hair to be all over the place. Can you corn roll it? Can you do something to tame it a little bit more, because it just doesn't look right that the way it comes out of your head. Do you get what I'm getting at all, Don, or anyone who's listening?
I understand very much, because I had, when I was younger, I had kinky hair that had to be thinned in order to match the styles. My hair was very, very kinky and curly when I was young, so I understand what it is to have that.
Yeah, so this isn't about a uniform.
Anything to do with that. My natural thing is to not comb my hair. My natural thing is to just be sloppy.
But you're suggesting, you're also suggesting.
And that is not really, doesn't look neat.
Yeah, I don't want to get into an argument or anything with you,
what
Don.
I'm talking about.
I'm going to put you on hold there, Don, because I do want Rena to have a chance to finish. Go ahead, Rena.
Yeah, I don't want to argue, at all this point, and that really is my major point, that we shouldn't have to argue about these things. I shouldn't have to defend my hair, because it looks or it styles differently than the majority in the workplace, or those who have the power to say what is or isn't neat, what is or isn't messy. That's really the issue. This isn't about me wearing a uniform. It's more about that I have to actually physically alter my hair in order to style it in a way that an employer feels comfortable. And now there's a law or precedent that's been set that this is okay. And this all started because the company was not comfortable with the choice that this woman made to style her natural hair, the way she styled her natural hair. And that choice came about because of race, because they weren't comfortable with it, or they thought that looked a little messy or similar to what I think Don is saying.
Yeah, Don. So and I'll just follow up briefly with you here, Don, and then I know Steve wants to join in on this as well. Don, the problem I have is it's not even an implication. You are basically saying straight out that if you met Rena and you see her hair, you would assume it's, what was the term, unclean or unkept?
He said unkept. Like, he has no idea what it takes to keep my hair. Like, none at all. Most people don't understand.
And
I do a lot more than just jump in the shower, shampoo it, and I see people come, I have colleagues that come to work with their hair wet still, so I know they don't have to do anything to it, because they literally jump out of the shower, put on their clothes, and by the time they get to work, it's actually still wet. I have to do a lot more to keep my hair.
And so, Don, what concerns me is, you talk about your own hair, you had tight curls in your hair, and that you felt like you could understand that you had to, do certain things to your hair to conform. But this is not a case of, well, people with dreadlocks just aren't keeping their hair clean and they're not professional. I have to say, what you're implying is that's what it is. And that's not correct. That's just not the case. I do want to let you follow up. I know Steve wanted to jump in here as well. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, the only thing I wanted to add was there's a tension in employment law jurisprudence in the United States, and it often arises where employees disagree with employer decisions. They think the decision is unfair. You know, everyone can look at a particular decision or a policy and say, yeah, that's not fair. That's wrong. That may even be a dumb policy. But the courts, as a general rule, they are loath to intervene. They do not want to act as super personnel departments overlooking company shoulders and saying, you know, this may be a dumb decision, but it's not unlawful. So, you know, I think it's important to understand the role that the court plays here and the predicament that the court is in. The court has to follow the law as the law is drafted.
I don't take it as you're defending, you know, sort of any, you know, of what makes people like Rena and others and frankly, you know, me feel that this decision could be injurious to a part of the population. What you're saying is you're reading what the judge is saying, you're reading the history, and you're understanding why it was made. And it is not a decision that lines up with what Don is saying, frankly. It lines up with what's mutable versus immutable. I think the question going forward is, can we get a better understanding of those terms here as they relate to employees of companies like someone like Rena, as opposed to someone who is wearing a hairstyle by choice? And the way, unfortunately, I think that more often than not, people of color have this label of, well, that's just a mutable characteristic and we're not comfortable with it. It's not professional because it doesn't meet a standard that is frankly whiter. And so, I mean, I think that's at the heart of this. But let me let Don finish up here and then I've got full phones. Go ahead, Don.
I don't feel that the dreadlocks, I like dreadlocks when they're very neat. Many people wear them. When I see people with the hair straightening down outside the dreadlocks, all messy. And as I said, 9 out of 10 do that. They don't take care of them. If they kept them maybe a little shorter or so that they didn't look straggly and unkempt, that would be different. Because a company has a right to have people looking so that people will trust them when they go to make a statement or do something for them. We all have to bend a bit meet standards, no matter what. I have to bend. I had to always bend the kind of clothes I wore to work. They weren't me, but I had to wear them.
All right, but Don, last question. I got to move on because I got more people who want to talk about this. Last question for you. What would it take to convince you that your feeling about dreadlocks is let me just put it this way. Are you open to the fact that maybe what you feel about dreadlocks is incorrect and that what you think is unkept or unclean or messy is actually just a different style? Different than yours, naturally different, but not unkept. That is just different, and that maybe you had assumed something that is not reflective of reality. Is that possible?
No, I don't quite accept that because I do like dreadlocks when they are neat and taken care of.
Okay. Thank you, Don. I appreciate the phone call.
Preference, too. You know, doesn't escape me that what we're talking about when we talk about appearance is we're talking about preference. We're talking about what I prefer to see. Don said a lot about what he preferred, you know, to see. And employers are also talking about what they prefer to see. And their preference is still, you know, is still based in some sort of social and racial construct that, yeah, that, you know, that creates a bias that I prefer to see hair look this way. And if it's this far away from this preference, I might consider it messy, unkept, unneat,
untrustable, Rena. He used the term, you know, have to be able to trust.
Yeah, that's deep. That's deep. And that's real.
Let's take our only break of the hour. I will come back to your phone calls. Andrew and Irondequoit's got a question on the way the EEOC framed their case and if they were concerned about winning the case or more expanding a definition. I think it's a question that I think Steve will be able to kind of weigh in on there. Josh in Rochester, many others. So we'll continue the conversation with our guest for the hour. Steve Jones is a partner at Nixon Peabody. He specializes in labor and employment law. And Arena Golden Collier is the co-creator of Kumba Consultants. And we continue next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on the next Connections, the Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence is bringing in Dominic Barter, who is known for his work in restorative justice in Brazil and internationally for his work in nonviolent communication. We'll talk to him about that. And then in our second hour, George Washington has become kind of a legendary figure, but he was a real man, and this is 240 years this week since two of his biggest decisions. We'll talk about them. All right, welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and Josh in Rochester is next. Go ahead, Josh.
Hi, yeah, I just wanted to thank you guys for having this discussion, and I think what Don said definitely speaks to a lot of Americans out there. I think it's troubling to some extent, but I do notice a lot of discrimination happening that might not be very overt, but I never really noticed a whole lot being said about the hipster trend. All these people who wear really, really thick beards, who I believe, you know, is unkept to some extent, but that never seems to be brought up, that people, you know, generally white males with, you know, very unkept beards. I never really hear about them, you know, losing jobs or not getting jobs. So I just thought that was something that should be brought up.
All right, so Josh, stay there for 1 second, because Steve Jones, an employer, could say to a white male employee, your beard's kind of out of control.
Absolutely.
Can you do something about it? They would be within the law. They could do that.
Yes.
And I suspect there have been cases where they have. Okay.
I'm not aware off the top of my head, but I'm sure.
Yeah, sure. And so they could. But what Josh, you seem to be saying is often they don't, or they're less likely to, versus an employee who has dreadlocks, for example.
Well, I think it's a slippery slope, but I'm just pointing out that I've never heard anything along that sort of. I mean, I know friends. I happen to have a very large unkept beard. I've also had dreadlocks in the past. I am a white male, and that did not work for me. I got pulled over, I think, 4 times when I had dreadlocks. Never since. And I've never been talked to about my beard before, but if I grow my hair out long or I decide to use, at one point I had braids during a formative period, and the gentleman that I worked for mentioned something about it and teased me about it and, you know, kind of made statements that, you know, you're lucky it wasn't like that when you applied for the job, that sort of thing. And it's kind of funny if I crossed the line over to a more ethnic hairstyle, I'm looked at a little bit funny, even by friends, people are, why would you want to do that? And it's, well, because I like the hairstyle, I wanted to try it out, and it just seems funny to me that it's always, not always, I should say, but often African Americans or minorities that are kind of put under a microscope, and I feel like the majority would kind of agree that it's just more acceptable to try to just fit into what the cultural norm is, as opposed to expressing yourself freely.
Josh, thanks for the phone call. I appreciate that. I take the points. I think there's two separate points there, though. There's the sort of this culture and society, and then there's the legal question. And I think Andrew in Irondequoit wants to weigh in on the way the EEOC handled this. Go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, so it's a good show. It's too bad we have to be so litigious about everything. But so the EEOC, I wonder, to the lawyer from Nixon Peabody, mm-hmm. Steve, right?
Yep, yes.
Steve, could the EEOC more likely won this case if they had gone with the more regular argument rather than try to expand the definition of the thing?
Yeah, it's a great question. Unfortunately, the explanation is a bit technical. The theory that the EEOC arguably may have prevailed on is called the disparate impact theory, and that is where an employer has a facially neutral policy that, in theory, should apply to all employees equally, but it turns out actually has a disproportionate adverse effect on a particular protected class. In this case, it may have been challenging for the EEOC to compile the data that would have been necessary to make that point, because typically disparate impact claims are proven through statistical evidence. So the EEOC would have to show the number of job applicants who were denied a job based on this grooming policy and show that those applicants who were denied the job tended to be African American, for example. So it would have been much more difficult case to prove statistically for the EEOC. And to your point, Andrew, I think the EEOC, in a last push here, was trying to make the Title VII definition of race to be as expansive as it could be. And that is that if there are certain, hairstyles, for lack of a better word, that are so closely physiologically and culturally associated with a particular class, that discrimination against that particular style is the equivalent of racial discrimination. And I think the EEOC wanted to set that precedent. And just so everyone understands the landscape here, this is just one court of appeals in the United States. Other court of appeals could rule differently on this and adopt the EEOC's interpretation. And ultimately, this may rest before the Supreme Court, which would have to decide this definition of race. The court in its decision went through a very, very long discourse, and I would encourage anyone to read the opinion because it is very well reasoned, talking about the history of race in this country and drawing upon treatises and definitions of race in the 1960s when Congress would have enacted the statute to try to understand what did Congress mean in 1964 when it defined race. And it's a very interesting discussion about what it is to have a racial definition. Is it cultural? Is it a subset of culture? Is there a biological component? Is it based on heredity? Is it anthropological? Very, very interesting discussion by the court.
Christopher on Twitter says, there was a time when even wearing an afro was a problem, and now this is just discrimination. David says, maybe this is a case that needs to be retried based on disproportionate impact. Steve, again, you kind of touched on that, but yeah, you want to answer to Dave's idea there?
Sure. The challenge there would be, in order to show disparate impact, you would need statistical evidence to do that. And in order for statistical evidence to be accepted into court, there has to be a significant sample size. So just a couple applicants here being denied that probably wouldn't meet a prima facie case of disparate impact.
Okay. Rena?
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of, I'm sure anybody who's listening who is African-American knows that traditionally one of the things that African-American women do when they are interviewing for a job is actually straighten their hair. Even if they wear their hair natural, they wear it in a straightened style for the interview. If they get the job, usually for a little while after they get the job, before they may return back to an afro, or to a more natural style, natural meaning more natural to the way that it comes out of my scalp. And so you may not get that sample because that is pretty much the way it goes. I know people personally who, would never interview with their hair in a natural style. They'd always straighten it. Mm.
Keith in Rochester, next up. Go ahead, Keith.
Yes. I think for me, I guess part of it is it's a matter of choice and consequence. I'm an African-American man who worked in the corporate setting as well here in Rochester. And although my hair, when it grows out, is not thick enough to dreadlock, it is thick enough where it would grow out and I had it twisted. Now, before I did that, I went to my manager, who happened to be an African-American woman, and told her what I was planning on doing and what, would this be permitted and would it be a problem? And because I didn't interface with customers, she said, no, it would not be a problem. But I think it's, again, a matter of choice and consequence. If I know that I want to, dress a certain way and work at a particular place, say, you know, if I wanted to grow a full beard and my hair long, and but yet I worked in a professional setting, maybe as a lawyer, that may not be permitted because I'm going to be interacting with clients, and they want a particular look. If that's what they want, but I want something else, I guess I'm thinking out loud to say, well, maybe this isn't the place for me. You know, maybe I need to find employment at a place where my objective to dress a certain way is in alignment with the employer. And if that being the case, I seek them out, and, you know, we have a happy union. If that's not the case, and I want to continue to receive a paycheck, there are some things sometimes that, you know, we have to compromise on, I guess. Even at the place that I work now, the individuals who work, you say, behind the scenes, their dress code is, whether, you know, although there's nothing obscene is allowed, but if you work behind the scenes, you know, you're pretty much, you know, at free will to do what you choose. But if you are the face of the customer there, or excuse me, the face to the customer, there's a certain expectation, no matter who you are, black, white, male, or female, to have a certain look. And so, I'm not arguing for or against. I read this story, and I saw it, and I was kind of shocked and disrupted or appalled by it, because back in the day, going back 10 years or so, I wanted dreadlocks, but my hair was not thick enough to dread. I could only twist it, and I'm sure Rena knows what I'm speaking of. But, you know, I had the question, I guess, you know, what was really going on here. But again, I think it's a part of it is the conversation is a matter of choice that we, or the choice that the individual makes, and the consequences that we're willing to deal with based on that choice.
All right, so Keith, hang on the line there. And Rena, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Keith brings up a very interesting point about choice, and like what really is choice. And of course we know that, you know, for an employer, the choice is to hire you or fire you. And you can do that in New York State, and they don't even really need a reason to do so. But this choice, I made that choice. You know, I made that choice to leave corporate because, you know, my hair was just one indication of my politics changing, my values changing, my morals changing, or me deciding to become more culturally expressive about really who I was and not, you know, wear the costume of someone who did not care about or was not proud of my culture and you know, and preferred more to assimilate to, you know, a more acceptable, you know, cultural narrative. And then that played out when I started my own agency as well. And I look around my agency and the artists, the teaching artists that we hire, and we're more culturally expressive as a, you know, a collective than not. You know, it's actually the minority for us to be like, you know, straight hair and, you know, and suited up, you know, more so than, you know, there's probably more dreadlocks and afros than anything on my on my roster of artists. So it is a matter of choice.
And is it possible what Keith is saying here is functionally correct, that that we know, and especially with this case is an example, that there are certain norms and standards that employers may have for employees that you better follow, and that is true. But then there's a larger question of why is it that we're so apt to feel that dreadlocks are unprofessional that dreadlocks are unkempt? You know what I mean? So I think Keith's right. You know, you got to understand sort of the rules of the game, and then the question is why is this larger? Why do I have this lack of comfort? Well, you know, Keith, I mean, is that fair? I mean,
I think that's fair. And I would go on to say I would disagree with Don to one point. Most of the people that I knew, that I do know, who have dreads, they are neat.
Yes.
And they are because it you look a lot better when they're tight, and Rena again knows what I'm speaking, when they're tight and they have a certain look to them, it just makes you look better. I mean, it's just like in any hairstyle, if it's done right and it's kept up, it has a certain look. Most of the people I know, they keep them up, and I know several who do that. But again, I think it's a matter of perception, you know, based on who you are and where you come from, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I think it's a matter, again, choice and consequence and knowing where the lines are and whether you can, or whether you want to, rather, play within the lines, or if you want to go play outside the lines, then you do as Rena did. You go out and you start your own company, and you have the freedom to function that way.
Well, Keith, thank you for the phone call. And I a lot of good stuff there. There's so many emails. I can't get through all of them. You know, here I was just totally unprepared for the deluge here. Tristan writes and says, I'd like to add to the conversation that messy is not only subjective, but white and straight hair can also be messy. I think the court decision in this case was made from a place of ignorance of both the natural realities of black hair and the significance of dreadlocks in black society. There is an underlying issue here, I think, about the definition of professional overall, and that we apply the term largely to appearance rather than behavior. I would welcome the panelists' thoughts on the larger issue of a definition about the term and concept of professional. I think that's exactly what we were just talking about with Keith. Steve, I mean, employers have the right to set their own rules on what is professional in their workplace, for the most part, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So,
and but it doesn't mean it won't also have that implicit bias associated with it too.
That's exactly the point that I think Keith's call raised, which is that yes, employers do have this right, but then how come it always seems, not always, how come so often, you know, people of color are the
or
ones
how
who
do
are
we
deemed
prevent
to be?
That? How do we prevent that from happening when employers, you know, the buck stops with them to say, hey, this is what it is. This is, you know, we want professional employees. And I don't think the way you're dressing, the way you're talking, the way you're being is professional right now. So bye-bye.
Catherine writes and says, there's a wonderful episode of The Daily Show that addresses this, and the Army recently went through this and changed its mind on policy because of The Daily Show's episode. It's called Operation Black Hair. I went back when Jon Stewart was hosting. I didn't see that, Catherine. She sent the link. But, yeah, I mean, I think, how do we start to change that? I don't know. Interact more with people who are not like us and not feel scared all the time is maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm saying it for me, too, by the way. I mean, I tend to get preachy with this, but I view this as an outgrowth of this fear of the other, concern of the other, that, well, dreads are just unprofessional. Dreads don't look like, you know, what we're used to. And that's kind of the concern I would have about that. Steve, just some quick final thoughts on the legal side of this. Do you expect challenges of this to continue here?
Yeah, the EEOC can certainly appeal this to the United States Supreme Court. And again, this is not necessarily well settled across the United States. This is just one court of appeals. So other court of appeals can take a different analytical approach to what race means under Title VII.
Okay, 20 seconds. Rena, some final thoughts from you. Go ahead.
I like what you said about, you know, just kind of challenging that fear and also the judgment, the piece that judges, you know, when we look out and think what we prefer, you know, and how, you know, these are the things that, because there's such an imbalance in terms of the balance of power, you know, as it goes down the color line or the race line, these are the things that are important for us to really look at. Because if you have the power to say someone is unprofessional, then you better be making that decision from a pure place.
Great having you. Thank you for being here, Rena.
Thank you.
Steve, thank you for coming from Nixon Peabody. Hey, Don, send me an email. We are going to try in this new year to start having these lunches of people from all different backgrounds and getting together. And if you want to join us, Don, send me an email, edawson@wxxi.org. Thanks, Kat, Megan. I'm Evan. Have a great day.